Hello everyone, I'm Andy Cook, the Vice-Chancellor of Ravensbourne University London, and I'm delighted to be hosting the first episode of our brand new podcast series, Ravensbourne On Record. This series will focus on topical issues in education, such as industry needs, skills development, careers, and social justice, with a range of high-profile guests joining me to consider the challenges and potential solutions. This episode of the podcast is called Higher Education Powering Social Mobility in the UK. And we're going to explore how the higher education sector can enable individuals from disadvantaged backgrounds to progress into higher skilled and satisfying careers. Today, we're joined by an extremely exciting and accomplished panel of guests. So allow me to introduce them. Richard Upton, creative entrepreneur, property developer and recent Ravensbourne Honorary Doctor. Dr. Kevin Latham, Research and Policy Manager at the Sutton Trust, and Lee Grant, Hybrid Creative at Mother and Ravensbourne alumnus. The government launched its 2035 industrial strategy in the autumn of last year, which earmarked eight sectors for enhanced support. However, many of these sectors are ones that have traditionally been less diverse, such as the creative and technology industries. So I'd now like to turn to our guests to get under the skin of some of these questions. So without further ado, let's kick off. So to what extent does the higher education in the UK serve as a driver for social mobility? And do you think universities are doing enough to support students from socially disadvantaged backgrounds? I'm going to go to Lee first on that one.
I am duly aware of the fact that a lot of people like me who come from disadvantaged backgrounds or don't have the kind of capacity or ability to be able to go to university, a lot of the reason why that's the case is because of the fact that universities create this like the ceiling that makes it incredibly hard for people like me to be able to get in the first place. But then you've got somewhere like Ravensbourne that looks at lots of different things and lots of different reasons why you can come in and kind of study. I mean, I come from a background where I'm first generation. I grew up in what I call ENDS, but which is like basically an area that's not necessarily the most developed and the most looked after. And that's, which seems ironic considering I come from a borough that's quite affluent. And they don't necessarily have, they don't necessarily inject the funds or the even give the due care to even look after young people.
No, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. Kevin.
To go straight to the question, I mean, certainly our research would show that university is a driver of social mobility. I think we have to acknowledge that it's not open enough for everybody, and that's something that needs to be addressed. But if you look at the outcomes of disadvantaged people who go to university, they're more likely to get into high-paying jobs. The gap between disadvantaged and non-disadvantaged graduates in terms of salary income, still disadvantaged students will end up with lower salaries, but the gap has narrowed from if they hadn't gone to university. So, like generally speaking, yeah, university is still a good driver of social mobility.
Thank you. Richard?
Yeah, well, Kevin's the expert. All I know, and I read the Sutton Trust report, it's really, really interesting report, so thanks for sending that through. That taught me something. But my understanding really comes from a personal journey, like me. I went to school 5-6 miles away from here. I was getting free school meals, and I read in the report that very few people, 16% of people who receive school meals, go on to university, where 75% of pupils that go to private school go to university, 50% of all students. So I with hindsight, I guess that's a rare journey. I didn't really see it like that, it was just my journey. But the because I've gone on to build businesses and and grow, you know, in terms of mobility, social mobility myself. With the benefit of hindsight, looking back and looking at the report, my higher education was a fundamental part of that. Now, it's not everything.
But just picking up on a couple of points you made there, I'm interested to from your experiences, what were the sort of expectations that you were given at university, and sort of, you know, what kind of careers advice and support you got?
I would say that the expectations I had for university is exactly how things played out, which was that I was going to come in, I was going to learn some stuff, I was going to meet some people, and then I was going to get a job. Obviously, the time that I graduated was an unusual time because it was in the middle of the pandemic, and so that the getting the job took a little bit longer. But fundamentally, what I believed I was going to do when I was coming to university was, like you spoke about, which was narrow that gap between myself and other peers that maybe had more advantaged backgrounds, so that when I was going into situations and being my authentic self, the only thing that could differentiate me between me and those peers was literally my own personality, my attitude to things, the background that I had. That's why I was coming to university. I couldn't come to university, do this degree. Culturally, this is, for me as a Black Caribbean woman, it's an unusual thing for me to go into this career as well.
So that expectation that you had, did that come from your lecturers? Did it come from your family? What was it within you that sort of...
Yeah, I think it was a combination of myself and my family expectations. Yeah. I'm also the first person in my family to pursue a creative career.
Yeah.
And so it was important for me to set the precedent that you can make money from a career that you're passionate about.
Richard, where did your hunger come from?
There was no expectation of me, and I owe that credit to my parents. I wasn't pushed. No one went to university in my family. It wasn't even talked about. I didn't have to do A-levels. I just sort of didn't really know what else to do, so I did two, and then I realised I needed a third. So I had to do a third one just in 1 year, because somebody told me that's what I needed to do to get to university. And that person, who had cultural capital, who understood the system, who went to Eltham College, I was in the cadets, and he was privately educated. He knew where to go. I didn't know where to go. My careers office in my comprehensive school was shut for all of the time I was there. It never opened.
Kevin, you were...
Richard said a lot of things there that we could pick up on. The other thing that Richard said I think is really worth picking up on is cultural capital. Mm. That's a really kind of important issue.
But how can we support people to sort of develop that cultural capital for themselves, as it were? You know, is it networking and key skills, you know, things like communication and project management and all those kinds of skills that are valuable in the workplace, I guess. But how do you give somebody that drive?
Well, I think, you know, universities can certainly do all of that. And once you've got people in university, then if you support them properly, then you're going to give them that kind of advice. Maybe, hopefully, Ravensbourne and other universities do much more of that these days, although we know that there's more that needs to be done across the board.
Yeah.
The reality of it is that we had the temerity and the motivation to be able to do it on our own, but we acknowledge the fact that that's a privilege in itself.
Yeah.
And I think in order for that to shift and pivot and change in the way that we want it to, there needs to be more of an investment in the way that we go into these schools, we go and have these conversations from those young ages, and start talking to the young people about the fact that they can go to university. I mean, the younger generation are very motivated and moved by money. They are, you know, passion projects are a massive thing, and that's a massive part of what drives them, but they are very motivated by money because of the society that we currently live in. I think, you know, reframing it as an ability to be able to take those passion projects and turn that into income, provided that they keep working on that and chipping away at that over the years, is something that we should be focusing on. But ultimately, I think my point is around, you know, we put a lot of responsibility on singular people, careers advice people to do that.
Lee makes a really good point there about role models and leadership. And you pick them up from any number of places. And without being sycophantic, you might pick them up from a podcast where you know, Lee might be inspiring somebody
really
right now. But that leadership, whether it be Ravensbourne here saying, how do we do this better as a, you know, as a higher education sector? And, you know, who's relevant, who can motivate me? Those role models are everywhere in the community. They just need to be more accessible, and that's critical.
Sutton Trust runs programs. This is where we, you know, started our work back in the 1990s, trying to help disadvantaged students get into, you know, competitive careers and universities. And those summer schools, the pathways to different careers programs that we run, are trying to give people role models.
Andrew, in this Sutton Trust, there's a very relevant point that you mentioned there, which is around, is that higher education is not the, you know, the panacea. It's not the only door. And on its own, of course, it might be quite weak in some respects. And I was reading Kevin's report, the Sutton Trust report last night. In one of the graphs, it says, which of the following are the biggest barriers to succeeding in life? What we're talking about here, the top was lack of job opportunities where you live. You know, it might be loads around us here in Greenwich or London, but less so in Huddersfield or Hull. The second one was poor work ethic, which was quite interesting. And the third was access to good education. And I think those top two are really, really interesting. So the opportunity to work when you're young and learn a work ethic or have local employment, which teaches you grit, and it teaches you a reward for every hour of effort you put in, which is quite a useful thing to learn early.
Yes.
That's gone. And now our 16 to 24, 29-year-olds are not earning while they're learning.
I mean, some valid points in there, and certainly something to think about in terms of work ethic. In terms of students working, I mean, what we're finding is that Our research, other research, has found that, you know, the student maintenance is not sufficient for many students to live on. So they're racking up that debt. But at the same time, many of them, especially the disadvantaged students, more likely to be going and having to work in, you know, a bar, a pub, a coffee shop, or cleaning, or whatever it may be that they've managed to find a temporary job to do. And they're more likely to be doing that, which ultimately affects their ability to study. But the model that we've suggested, you could also introduce kind of progressive repayments so that lower income earners would pay back less than higher income earners. So they pay back at different rates. It's all in a report, which I'll be happy to share. But if we follow that model, then it basically doesn't really cost the Chancellor of the Exchequer an awful lot of money. In fact, it's zero. If you follow our suggestion, then it doesn't cost anything more.
It's sort of zero net impact,
yeah, exactly,
on that. I wanted to pick up on a point, sort of rewinding from this sort of financial part of the discussion to this point about sort of role modelling and the idea of sort of social responsibility and how that... How can we encourage people to give back?
I think we need to start looking at the way that we value things, and when we're looking at people to come and be role models for younger people. I think often we go, oh, their educational background is the reason why they should be motivated by things, and oh, this person has a degree and therefore this is the right person to talk to these types of students. Looking far and wide about what those role models kind of encapsulate, and not just kind of looking at them from the point of, oh, this person has managed to have the determination and drive to be able to take themselves to university when they haven't necessarily had the role models themselves, but just kind of also looking at the people that didn't necessarily do that, but did it in a slightly different way and didn't necessarily go to university, and can have those conversations with young people.
So I'm going to take us on to the next question, which is it's about the financial aspects. So with the rising cost of tuition fees and the cost of living crisis, do you think that universities are becoming a barrier to social mobility rather than a pathway? And I'll perhaps start with Kevin on this one. Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot of research in this area, haven't you?
Yeah, sure. So certainly the cost of living is a problem for students. We found that our polling found that I think it was just over a quarter of students had skipped meals because of financial issues, trying to save money here and there. And I think, you know, a lot of other students would also say that they're on very tight budgets as well. So certainly the cost of living is creating, you know, problems for students. Goes back to what I was saying earlier, that the maintenance system needs to be updated and adjusted in a way that is going to better help especially more disadvantaged students, I think.
Thank you. Richard, do you have a view on that?
I've enjoyed all of Kevin's statistics and things, and I'm less well learned, you know, on in that aspect than him and the Sutton Trust. But I do know that there is absolutely no way I would have gone to university had I. I think I had a. You could get a NatWest bank account and have a $2,500 overdraft or a $2,000 overdraft, something like that, and they would. You know, that's how the banks would secure your loyalty, by giving you a bit of an overdraft. And everyone I knew maxed that out. But had it been necessity for me to pay £10,000 or £12,000 in fees, I wouldn't have gone to university. Not a chance. I feel privileged, deeply privileged, and a little embarrassed now that I had a free education. Mm. I had a free state education. I had a free higher education. And I feel slightly guilty. In fact, I'm giving some bursaries back at Reading to disadvantaged students as part of that guilt, because I think I need to put something back, you know. It shocks me to learn about the 2008, the anti-inflationary level of accessibility for maintenance grants. I don't think there should be any fees. Certainly to a proper level, inflation hedged, in society. Otherwise, it is a barrier. And then debt anyway, I think culturally is a barrier for those that are not used to debt, because, you know, my family, you couldn't repay debt. You couldn't get into debt because you would be extinguished. You'd be in real trouble. So it wasn't part of the conversation. Gus, I mean, you would know better.
Do you want to go to Lee?
What were tuition fees when you went to... That was... 2009, was it?
It went up, and then, yeah, I came to university 2016-17, and then £9,000 a year.
Yeah, wow.
Maintenance loans. Mm. I wish someone put £9,000 in my pocket. It'd be really nice. But I think my view on this is that, like, I guess the question itself answers itself. I mean, rising tuition fees and the cost of living crisis is ultimately a barrier than a pathway to social mobility. Like, it is. We know that for a fact. I think we can acknowledge the fact that culturally, as you've mentioned, like, debt in itself is a fearful thing, and it's something that a lot of families from disadvantaged backgrounds try and avoid. It's something that you grow up learning is a bad thing, and grow up understanding that actually, you know, money is something that we've obviously discussed before. Money is something that creates comfort. And not having that money or putting yourself in that debt creates that discomfort and that uneasiness. And I think you kind of nodded to it earlier about, you know, you're taking yourself out of the workforce for 3 years to go and get this degree with no certainty at the end that you're actually going to get a job because of the way that the job market looks. And I think by increasing the tuition fees, you're ultimately saying to giving people the ultimatum between, either I go into this debt knowing that there's a high risk of me never being able to come out of this, doing the degree that I've gone in to do in the first place, or being able to earn the amount of money that I understand I'm going to be able to earn based on this degree that I'm going to, or I'm going to go into the workforce and grind and try my hardest over those 3 years to be able to get into that role by doing short courses and doing this and doing whatever, or even just trying to build that network. We know that, and we understand that actually, your network, as cliche as it sounds, your network is genuinely part of your net worth. And so I would say, based on, like, the young people that I'm speaking to now, the decision is ultimately between putting yourself in debt or turning around and spending those 3 years really grinding and trying to create that network for themselves to ultimately result in them being able to go and get these jobs. So,
I think the universities, as part of the system, almost have a responsibility to help, like a clutch, an engagement between, you know, growing up and what do I want to do with my life? Mm. You know, how do I want to be the best person I can, which is the wider social mobility, you know, suggestion. I was lucky. I knew I was interested in places, spaces, making places. It was an environmental thing that came from design and technology and drawing buildings, but needed some money, so just started to look at property. It was a sort of natural synergy. I did a vocational degree. I wanted to learn about architecture and buildings and land and planning and stuff. And Lee, I think, is using what skills she's got at Ravensbourne. It sounds like a really interesting job in the creative sector. And I look at a number of the courses you've got here at Ravensbourne, and I can see there's a real looking over the bridge at where you might take those skills into the world and create, add value to both yourself and to the world.
Do you think that's a what do you think the difference between sort of traditional and non-traditional universities is in this space? I mean, Ravensbourne, you know, it's clearly a non-traditional, you know, we're the new kid on the block in that sense. We're 6 years old as a university and growing and want to be different from those traditional academic sort of ivory tower kind of institutions that you may be familiar with. But what do you think what's the difference? How can we be different to that?
Shall I go on that one?
Yeah,
okay. Before coming to that, can I just say something about the debt issue as well? That it is important to remember that the debt of a student loan. I mean, I would agree that we shouldn't have tuition fees in an ideal world, and there should be much better student support, financial support, etc. But in terms of it being a barrier, just going back to that question very briefly, it seems to me important to point out that the student loan, you know, it's not like a loan in the bank that you've got to start paying it back tomorrow. You don't start paying it back until you're earning over, not a very high threshold. So you start fairly quickly,
yes,
as soon as you get a job, basically. But you are paying back a relatively small portion of your income. I mean, I know that probably doesn't feel like that for Lee. But it is worth pointing out, because I'm saying this because I don't want to create too many barriers to higher education.
Sure.
I think that is the way that a lot of young people should be thinking. It's not for everyone. Mm. Some people will be better off going down the let's grind out a network route. That will be better for some people. University isn't for everyone, but it shouldn't be ruled out because of some misconception about what the
yeah.
idea of debt is. That's what I want to say.
Okay, so given a magic wand and everything that we've discussed today, in 30 seconds, what one thing would you change to better support social mobility in the UK? I'm going to go to Richard.
It was late at night. I wrote magic wand and thought about it coming in here. We need to collaborate. We need to work together. Education is definitely part of that process, but we need to redeploy our intellect for the greater good of our neighbours. We need to prioritise with a fiscal incentive how each person should have a sort of an incentive to create more social and economic impact and save the planet rather than more individual wealth.
Thank you. Kevin?
From what we've talked about today, we would focus on improving the student finance system. I think that is kind of one of the easiest quick fixes. Easiest, I don't know, nothing's easy, but it's something that can be done at relatively little cost to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is really important at the moment. It's something that could put more money in students' pockets. It could make it easier for disadvantaged students in particular. It won't solve all their problems, but it would go some way to helping them helping more students have equal opportunities in university and what that brings you in terms of improving skills, networking, professional experiences, opportunities to go over the bridge, as you said earlier, to the next place and so on. So,
great suggestion. Thank you. Lee?
I'm going to cheat a little bit. And I'm going to say the word accessibility in general, which tries to encapsulate what both of you guys have said in terms of like financial responsibility and like the way the economy is, but also what I kind of tapped into earlier around like role models and the way that we look and we assess how we bring people in to get young people from secondary school age looking at universities and looking at the ability to go to university. So accessibility as like an overarching thing. That's what I would kind of magic wand and throw in there. But yeah, I definitely agree with both of you on what you've said. But I would say, yeah, the role model part, I would just add to that in terms of just having more people that look like me in spaces, having conversations, because let's be real, there's just not enough people that look like me that are having these conversations with young people from disadvantaged backgrounds. So,
yeah, great suggestion. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you to all of you for your contributions. Really interesting, stimulating conversation. So thanks again. And I think we'll end the programme there.
Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.